Good morning, Ms. McAllister.
Good morning, Your Honors. Shall I begin?
You can. You know what? Let me take a second and express something from the panel as a whole. You know, there's something you don't hear nearly often enough, and it's thank you. And that's to you as a Chapter 13 trustee and somebody who, along with Chapter 13 trustees around the country, really makes this system work. There's an awful lot in your argument that I think is indicative of your commitment to the job and your view about how the system ought to work. And we want to take that very seriously. I think you can probably assume that, you know, given our day jobs as bankruptcy judges, and we deal with Chapter 13s, all of us, you are at some level preaching to a choir on that one. So I'm not telling you what you should or shouldn't say. I'll tell you, you don't have three people skeptical about the worth of anything you do.
Thank you.
In my mind, this is a fascinating statutory construction problem, and you are free to take it wherever you want, but you know, you've got people who are well aware of the of how hard you work and the value of what you provide to the system.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, if it may please the court, good morning, Your Honors. My name, of course, is Kathleen McAllister, and I am the Chapter 13 trustee for the District of Idaho. And an issue before the court today is the issue of the compensation of standing Chapter 13 trustees. That compensation is controlled by 28 U.S.C. Section 586E and nothing else. Therefore, that
because of the situation and what Judge Lafferty said, one, I second what he said. Two, I think we can jump right into it.
Okay.
And to not put too fine of a point of it, reading the materials in your brief, the biggest problem I see is 1226, and now I believe it's 1194 for the Chapter 12 trustees and the Sub 5 Chapter 11 trustees that have an express provision statutorily for compensation to the trustee for 586 fees when the plan is not confirmed, and that does not exist in Chapter 13, in 1326. How do we get around that statutory problem that Evans and the other cases, you know, put out there?
Your Honor, I think there's a couple answers to that. And first of all, in the history and when the Bankruptcy Act, the Reform Act, was started in 1978, it talked about trustees shall collect their fees or from the payments made under the plan. And in the 1986, when Chapter 12 was added, the code was changed and 586 was changed, and it added the word receipts. So it changed from the trustee will collect their payments for, you know, their fees from payments made under the plan. It says from receipts. And that was at the same time they added 1226. 1226 is different. You know, Chapter 12 is a different animal. And I think what they were trying to do is kind of give people notice of, you know, if you made a big payment in a Chapter 12 case, you know, and that case did not go any further, that you were subject to losing the trustee's percentage of fees on that payment. In Chapter 13, debtors are required to make their payments monthly. They're supposed to start making payments within 30 days of filing. In Chapter 12, those payments are voluntary. They're not always due prior to the confirmation of a plan. And the other thing in Chapter 12 is those payments could be really big. That debtor could sell a $100,000 piece of equipment and turn over a large sum of money. So I look at 1226 as more of a notice to the debtors that, you know, this could happen.
Well, I guess the issue, in my view, is a conceptual issue.
Okay.
It's a two-parter, okay? The first part is what Judge Spraker raised, which is what Evans basically says is, look, if 586 is thoroughly self-contained, why did Congress need to deal with, you know, a fee question and what happens to a fee? And I hear what you're saying. It doesn't really resolve the analytical question for me of why you'd need to do that if 586, if the inquiry can begin and end in 586, what was Congress doing? And I hear you're saying it's a notice issue, but to me it's a little deeper than that. And the second part of the question for me is it rational for us to think of 586 as totally deciding not just the administrative question of how much should the fees be, what should the ceilings be, what should happen if that's exceeded, And we can get to the refund issue in a minute or two. I bet you will. And I've got a couple questions about that. But not only all that, but how should it be disposed of once we're in a Chapter 12 or 13 case? In my view, the second piece of this is harder for me to grasp. And maybe that's because maybe the fundamental issue is I'm maybe not where you want me to be in terms of what collect ought to mean. That collect doesn't necessarily mean collect and pay. But I mean, I see a very logical difference between what Congress is trying to do in 586 and what I think it's trying to do in the bankruptcy code. And to me, they're two different issues. So I've asked you a lot of questions, so now I'm going to go ahead and take a whack at it. Okay.
Well, I guess what I was trying to say is, I think that Congress intended that the trustees already collected their fee pursuant to 586 when that payment comes in. You know, 586 doesn't say that the trustee is going to collect her.
Apologize. I mean, if the fee were payable separately to the trustee, I would see that much more easily. Given that it derives from a payment that's going to go to creditors and that will not go to creditors if the case isn't confirmed, I have a harder time with that.
I understand. I wish I could frame a better argument. I just think it's what makes the statutes have harmony. You know, to have a different result is a bad thing.
I
think that Congress didn't anticipate that trustees would have to give those fees back, because otherwise how do we fund our offices? You know, part of the basis, you know, when Congress set up Chapter 13, it was set up to be self-funding. Mm-hmm. And the percentage fee was the way that they got to that, because, you know, that way all the debtors would make a payment, and it wasn't just, you know, if there was a small case that had payments of $50 a month, and we couldn't say we can't administer this case for you. So I think it was a way to bring bankruptcy relief to all the debtors by making it self-funding, and to not have the trustee be allowed to keep those fees means that those debtors that, you know, didn't come to the bankruptcy court with a good plan, a feasible plan with good intentions, you know, they're getting a free ride.
And they're getting
it on the backs of the cases where the debtors, you know, intend to confirm a plan. And we all know there's debtors that come to this court that are just trying to buy time for a loan modification. Okay.
Why don't you take the money then as it comes? I mean, some of this is fighting custom and practice, right? Because you get the first PAM payment, you don't take your 10% off the top or 8%, whatever that percentage is under 586. The trustees generally wait until confirmation. That's the problem, isn't it?
That's not correct. You know, we take our fee when that money posts to the case, that the trustee's fee is pulled out of that. So our system is only showing you the amount that's available to unsecured creditors. We do collect our fee at the same time we post that payment.
But then why isn't that in the parlance of 1326 paid?
I'm not sure I understand your question. It says that the trustee shall collect their receipt, their fee, before any payments to creditors.
No, it says before or at the same time.
Before or at the same time. That's correct.
That leaves open the question of what the heck does before mean, and that kind of befuddled me a little bit too.
So that raises this issue. I can understand how 1326A2 suggests, or A1 suggests, that what remains for the trustee to disperse upon dismissal of the case is only that amount that would have been payable to creditors. She's already taken her fee out. All she's got left is what's payable to creditors, and from that she has to decide if there are 503B claims that have to be paid. Otherwise, the balance goes back to the debtor. What's confusing is that 1326B seems to indicate that on or before. And so, you know, it recounts and goes back to 586 as if the 586 payment wasn't already taken by the trustee. So that's where there seems to be some incongruity among the statutes. So maybe you can help us with what do you think 1326B is trying to accomplish by saying on or before, and then recounting that the trustee's payment is part of the on or before payments due in the priority that's occurring. How is that consistent with your concept that you're taking your fee off the top from the very beginning as the plan payments are made? You follow that question?
I do, and I think that stems historically. When the Bankruptcy Act was, or the Chapter 13 program was first established, the trustee was paid their fees on disbursements. And what that resulted in was a lot of trustees that had offices that had a lot of funds sitting in the bank, but they couldn't take those funds to pay their expenses until those cases got confirmed. And so that money just sat there. And so when they did the 1986 Act, they recognized that that was a problem, and that's why it said in 586 clearly, the trustee will take their payments on receipts. And so that way, the money came right into our office so that we could deposit those funds into our expense account, and we could pay our salaries, our rent, you know, of course, all the expenses that go with running an office. And I think, you know, that's where 1326B says, you know, we'll collect those funds before or at the time of.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
I think so. I mean, I'm sympathetic to your position, and my understanding is B might be a timing question rather than an absolute, you know, a determination of what monies you're holding, as much as it is saying you have to get paid before you can disperse money to creditors under the case. Or you have to get paid as you're dispersing monies to creditors. And why I raise that is because you do make adequate protection payments. You do make, in conduit cases, if you're in a conduit jurisdiction, you make conduit payments. If you were waiting to confirmation to get your money, you would be violating the statute if you made those payments to creditors without taking your fee. And if your fee can't be payable until the case is confirmed, you have a problem, don't we, that you'd be violating the statute 1326B.
Correct. And you bring up another point with conduit payments or adequate protection payments. You know, how is it fair that I should make adequate protection payments to creditors, take that liability, input those claims, make the disbursement, incur all those expenses, and then if the debtor turns around a month later and says, you know, I really don't want to be here, now not only do I have to refund the debtor, you know, the money that I'm still holding, but I should go back and take the fee that I took on those payments and give that back to the debtor. You know, I just don't think that's appropriate, and I don't think that's what Congress intended. And I really think that the Congress tried to address this issue by putting that language in 586 in 1986 that said the trustee will collect her fees on the receipt. Shall collect. It's not ambiguous. And there's nothing in 586 that says anything about me refunding any of those fees. Well,
can I ask a question about that language?
Of course you may.
Why does it necessarily follow that collect on receipts means basically pay yourself? Why couldn't it just as easily mean make sure it's there on receipts, as in you're not going to have to go chase it later? What about collect means basically pay yourself?
Because the Chapter 13 offices needed to have those funds to
buy. I don't doubt it's a really good thing. What in the language dictates that result in your mind? How does collect receipts mean anything other than make sure you get an amount equal to, so that you will be able to do this thing the code says you're supposed to do, as opposed to do it now?
Well, I think that's what they tried to do when they added that word, because if they don't have that, then I have to sit on those funds. And I think what you're suggesting is that, okay, I make sure the money's there, but I don't pull it out of the case. And then later down the road, if the plan gets confirmed, then I have those funds and they're available.
Let me put it this way. I'm not saying I don't think the world would be a better place if you're right. The question is this a judicial function or a congressional function?
Congressional function.
Well, that's the wrong answer.
I think Congress says we want you to get paid for doing this service for us. Yeah.
I don't doubt that. And I don't doubt you have a really good reason for thinking that. The question I have is, can I really get that from the statute, or should Congress go back to work here and make it clearer? Because I'm not suggesting that you're not describing something that nobody would be very happy with, you know. But I, you know, the question is, I'm not finding facts here. I'm just looking at the statute, and I don't feel quite as compelled as you do at the proposition that collect upon receipt means pay yourself.
I think you get that from the statute, because Section 586 is the only statute that deals with trustees' compensation. 1326 doesn't deal with trustees' compensation.
But 1326 deals with where the money goes. That's the problem.
It deals with when I disperse those funds.
So Ms. McAllister, doesn't what I think Judge Lafferty's focusing on is what I think you've argued before in your brief, which is collect doesn't mean retain and hold. It would have said retain and hold the fees.
Correct.
It says collect. When you collect the filing fee, when you collect your fee, the word collect has a cognizance in our language that is substantially different than retain and hold or possess or, you know, maintain an account with. That's not what's going on here, right?
Well, I guess on the other side of the spectrum, I would say I'm not convinced collect means pay yourself. I mean, I wish Congress had used a better word, but that's what I'm struggling with, okay?
And I respectfully disagree. I think that definition of collect is to take the funds.
Okay.
And I don't think it's ambiguous.
Okay.
I'm sorry, did I hear somebody ask something?
Yeah, Judge Spraker, don't you have to recollect within the context of the second sentence, which reads, such individual shall pay to the United States trustee and the United States trustee shall deposit? As soon as you collect, isn't there an equal obligation to pay to the United States trustee? Doesn't that mean that it's not a hold and see what happens situation? That second sentence is imposing an affirmative obligation to, in certain situations where the percentages work, to pay the United States trustee in furtherance of the self-funding aspect that you described.
I think it's immediate. You know, I'm supposed to collect these funds, and the only funds I refund to the U.S. trustee system is if I've over-collected, if I've taken more than my statutory amount.
Right, but in that instance, you have to pay then. Not upon confirmation.
Right, correct.
But you also don't true that up until the end of a quarter, correct?
Or to the end of a fiscal year.
End of a fiscal year. Okay.
Correct.
We're having a little trouble making sense of the statute, and I think you can see why.
I can. I just know what the congressional intent was, and it was that trustees need to get these funds.
Okay.
I just want to put this into.
Nobody knows that.
I just want to put this into perspective too.
Yeah.
I would tell you that in fiscal year 2020, I had 185 new cases filed. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the smallest trustee in the circuit. Alaska, Montana, the North Idaho trustee are smaller. And of those 185 cases, 72 of them dismissed prior to confirmation. 8 of them converted to a Chapter 7 prior to confirmation. So 43% of my debtors didn't have to pay administrative fees, even though my office is going to process those cases as if each one of them is going to result in a confirmation.
I have no doubt in the world about it. Yep.
I'm preaching to the choir.
But is that in the record?
That is not in the record. That is in my annual report to the U.S. trustee that I created for the October, that was due in October of this year, and also, filed with the U.S. trustee for statute. Okay.
Well, we're a little over our time, but I don't want to cut anybody off because this is a really important issue. Do my panel mates have any further questions? Anybody?
I do. One of the other pillars of Evans and the cases ruling against you is this concept of a revocable fee. I am having trouble with that concept. From your perspective, I'm asking you to defend the other side, but there's nothing that suggests that a fee is revocable. A fee, especially in a self-funded program that's designed to essentially pay to play, seems anathema. I mean, you can come in and we'll hold your deposit, and if you don't like what's going on, you get your fee back. That just doesn't...
The problem is I agree with you totally. It's because, nobody says that the debtors are going to get their filing fees back if they decided, not to go ahead with their Chapter 13. They're not revocable. The statute doesn't say they're revocable. And there's nothing in there that says these fees are revocable. The trustee shall collect her fees from all payments received under the plan.
Can I ask, in certain instances, a Chapter 13 debtor can pay a filing fee by installments and can pay administrative noticing by installments. I mean, it's kind of, runs contrary. In those situations, when are those filing fees paid? Upon confirmation? as soon as you get the money? When are those fees paid?
The court will enter an order that will either give a schedule that might say 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, but the clerks tell me that they don't even look at it for 120 days. The clerks also tell me that they won't confirm a plan if the filing fees aren't paid. And they also, and of course, the code tells me I'm not even allowed to pay in a debtor's attorney's fees if the filing fees haven't been paid.
Okay.
But the debtors...
Do you pay the filing fee upon getting enough money through the payments?
I don't pay the filing fees. But I'm, you know, if the debtor doesn't pay the filing fees, their case is subject to dismissal.
And any portion of the filing fee that is paid by the debtor before dismissal isn't returnable to the debtor upon dismissal.
Absolutely correct.
It's a separate payment than the payment that's made through the plan. It's made to the clerk's office. And the clerk holds that amount of money, and they deal with it. It's a separate requirement that it be fulfilled in order to go forward with the case, but it's not paid through you.
Correct.
And it's collected under a statute, and it's not refundable. And it's once it's received, it's the money of the court.
Correct.
All right.
And if the debtor doesn't pay that fee, then the case is subject to dismissal.
Yep.
But that's because it's a requirement in order to move forward that you pay the filing fee like in every other case, unless it's been waived. And it wouldn't be waived in the first case. It should be paid in installments.
You know, okay. And the other problem with, of course, with not allowing trustees to collect their percentage fees is it just creates a financial conflict of interest. You know, you're telling trustees that they need to confirm plans when really our job is, yes, we want to confirm plans that should be confirmed and comply with all of the requirements of the code, but we want to be independent and be able to go to the court and say, you know, Your Honor, I can't confirm this case because this is what's wrong with it, or it doesn't comply with the code, or whatever the reason might be. And it kind of puts us in a bad position because we also need to be able to fund our offices so that we can help our debtors.
Okay. The bottom line, Judge Spraker had a question about the financial situation that you were describing in terms of the number of debtors and cases that were filed in jurisdiction. But we look at this issue as a statutory construction question, right? It doesn't turn on the facts. It doesn't turn on how much you charge. It's whether the fee is payable, whether it's collectible, as you've indicated, or not by virtue of our application of the law. The facts don't change that, do they?
Correct.
Okay, is that satisfied, my panel mates?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you.
Very good argument. We'll take this matter under submission.
I appreciate it. You guys have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you, too.